Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
Support for KXE comes from the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8 p.m., offering guests martinis and menu items such as chicken Kiev, a Reuben, or fettuccine Alfredo. The dinner menu and additional information are available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
And this coming up next is the Up North Report. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, we are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. Join us at KAXE.org.
And we'll take a look at the weather today. Areas of fog, for a couple more hours until about 10 a.m. Mostly sunny and highs 74 to 76. Calm winds. Tonight, mostly clear, lows 54 to 56, also with calm wind. And Thursday, tomorrow, sunny, highs in the mid to upper 70s, overnight lows in the high 40s. And Friday, sunny with highs 70 to 75, southwest winds 5 to 10. It sounds like it's going to be a warm one.
Yes. A little warm up before the real fall begins.
Yeah. You know, you just never know when it's coming. So.
All right. Now it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. A Bemidji woman with a profound impact on community organizing for social justice issues died Saturday at the age of 54. Simone Senegals was a Red Lake Band member with given names of Chinodinikwe and Miskomakwakwe. She was the operations director for the Indigenous Environmental Network, a global organization that organizes campaigns around environmental justice. She was also one of the founders of MMIW 218, raising awareness and building community for families of missing and murdered Indigenous relatives in the Bemidji area. Among her many tributes Monday, MMIW 218 says Senegals, quote, reminded us that violence on the land and violence on our bodies are connected, and she stood boldly to protect both. Senegals was featured on KAXE over the years to discuss this connection, including in this excerpt from 2017.
If you want to disempower a people, you attack the women, and I think Indigenous women have been dealing with that and are still dealing with that.
Awake for Senegals will begin Thursday evening at the new Red Lake Center with traditional services to follow Friday morning. About a dozen residents packed into Black Duck Small City Council chambers for the first of three public hearings Monday aimed at amending the city's cannabis ordinance. People there expressed concerns about the changes a cannabis business could bring to the small northern community of about 850 residents like Jeff Beachley of Black Duck.
Fathers of this town, I mean, they're spinning in their graves for even considering something like this. I just don't understand it. Why would you want to bring that into here in the first place?
In August, the council heard a proposal for a cannabis cultivating facility to reoccupy the closed Shade Store-owned Anderson Fabrics manufacturing plant. Those behind it say it could create about 150 jobs in the wake of 100 lost with the closure. But despite its location in an industrial zone, the proposed site is also near Black Duck Head Start and Early Childhood Center. The council opted to begin the ordinance amendment process earlier this month, proposing to eliminate required buffers for cannabis cultivators and manufacturers near schools and daycares while maintaining them for retail cannabis businesses. During the hearing, residents raised concerns about marijuana businesses being too close to children and doubted how many of the proposed new jobs could be filled locally. Black Duck entrepreneur Erica Naughton says she previously worked as a recruiter for the Shade Store manufacturing plant.
So has anyone looked at really seeing if there's actually 150 people looking for a job in this area? We have a business in town. We struggle getting people from Bemidji to Black.
City Administrator Christina Regas says the city has included Head Start leadership in conversations about the changing cannabis ordinance.
Their members and their board of directors have no problem with that business going into that location as long as it is not retail.
All local governments in Minnesota were required to adopt a cannabis ordinance following the legalization of adult-use cannabis in 2023. Black Duck's ordinance delegates the licensing and enforcement responsibilities to Beltrami County. Essentia Health is highlighting a new third-party report that shows the system's economic impact throughout northern Minnesota. Megan Buffington has more.
The study from economic development firm Northspan measures the jobs and economic output from the organization in the Brainerd Lakes area and on the Iron Range. Essentia is the biggest employer in the Brainerd area with nearly 1,000 staff, with another 1,000 indirect jobs created by the organization's work. Essentia directly employs 850 in the Greater Range region and indirectly creates another 850 jobs in construction, medical equipment, and supply chain and logistics. It's one of the largest employers in the region outside of the mines. The study calculated Essentia's economic impact by looking at the organization's revenue, employee salaries, Essentia's spending, and the goods and services purchased by Essentia employees. That amounted to $734 million in the Brainerd area and $583 million on the range and beyond. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our Music Morning Show and Phenology teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
That is the Up North Report. Coming up next is more from Morning Edition, talking about the UN General Assembly, talking about the Russia-Ukraine thing, and then also NATO airspace, talking about that in just a bit. We receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information at dalesautobodyinc.com.
We receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering workshops in October. Mixed Media Animal Portrait on October 17th through 19th, and The History and Harvesting of Clay on October 22nd, both held at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
And Northern Exposure to Lifelong Learning hosts storyteller and poet Anne-Marie Newman this morning from 9:30 to 11 at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Clearbrook. And coming up in about a half hour, we're going to be talking with a member of the Bemidji Lions Club, talking about an upcoming fundraising event. And around 8:40, it's going to be Area Voices, where we talk about the art kits that the Kichigami Regional Library System has been giving out this past summer.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good morning. President Trump has again adjusted his stance toward Russia. As you may know, he has sometimes reached out and sometimes threatened President Vladimir Putin before backing off.
At the United Nations yesterday, Trump seemed to revert to the old approach taken by President Biden and supported by many Republicans. Get weapons to Ukraine and let them fight it out with Russia. He called Russia, quote, a paper tiger, and says Ukraine, with European help, can win back all of its territory.
Trump also said NATO members should shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter NATO airspace. Coming up, we'll hear from the foreign minister of Estonia, where Russian planes did fly last week. We start with NPR's Michelle Kellerman and Trump's approach to Russia.
When President Trump took the podium at the UN General Assembly, he touted his negotiating skills, suggesting he should get the Nobel Prize for resolving 7 conflicts, though not yet Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza or Russia's war against Ukraine.
Of the 7 wars that I stopped, I thought that would be the easiest because of my relationship with President Putin, which had always been a good one.
He said Russia, too, thought this war would be easy.
Everyone thought Russia would win this war in 3 days, but it didn't work out that way. It was supposed to be just a quick little skirmish. It's not making Russia look good. It's making them look bad.
Later, after meeting Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Trump wrote that he believes Putin and Russia are in big economic trouble. And with patience and support from Europe, he suggested Ukraine can win back the country in its, quote, original form. And who knows, maybe even go further than that, Trump wrote with an exclamation point. Zelensky told the UN Security Council that he had a good meeting with Trump, and he said it is Russia that is holding up peace talks.
One of the prominent members of this council is doing everything to prolong the largest war in Europe since World War II. Russia does this with impunity, using its veto power, buying influence, and keeping peace on hold.
He told China, another veto holder on the Security Council, that it has influence and could compel Moscow to end the invasion.
Without China, Putin's Russia is nothing. Yet too often, China stays silent and distant instead of active for peace.
As for the U.S., he says Russia fears Washington and will pay attention to what Trump does. Russian President Vladimir Putin rarely comes to the U.N. General Assembly and didn't this year. He sent his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, who is expected to meet with Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Rubio told the Security Council that Trump has put a lot of time and effort into resolving this conflict.
The president is a very patient man. He's very committed to peace, but his patience is not infinite.
Rubio held out the possibility of tougher sanctions on Russia and more weapon sales to Ukraine, but he didn't spell out exactly when the U.S. might act. Like Trump, he said the war has been damaging for Russia.
Some of the numbers we are seeing in the loss of life among military personnel, for example, on the Russian Federation side, are staggering. Staggering. In 1 month alone, more loss of life than in the entirety of the U.S. engagement in Afghanistan or Iraq.
Rubio says the U.S. made what he calls generous offers to have a ceasefire at the current lines. But in the weeks since Trump held a summit with Putin in Alaska, the Russians have ramped up their attacks on Ukraine and sent drones and fighter jets over NATO airspace. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the United Nations.
After those drones and jets flew over NATO countries, members of the alliance warned Russia on Tuesday they would retaliate in unspecified ways if it happens again. Terry Schultz reports from Brussels.
It was the second time in as many weeks that NATO countries met an emergency session to talk about how to handle the growing number of airspace incursions by Russia. Fighter jets in Estonian airspace for 12 minutes last week, 19 drones in Poland earlier in the month. While Moscow denies the Estonian breach, NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte is warning the Kremlin to stop what he called this dangerous pattern, and he praised NATO's response so far.
Our pilots are doing precisely what they are trained to do when there is a potential risk of incursion. And it works.
No NATO citizens have been hurt nor major infrastructure damaged in the last month by Russian air incursions. But as for deterring the incidents, that's another matter. I asked Rutte about that.
Wouldn't it work better if they never entered NATO airspace?
Clearly, what the Russians are doing is not acceptable, and what they will see now is that whatever happens, we are there.
The Polish government has decided to go further than NATO has collectively, with Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk saying they will, quote, shoot down flying objects without discussion when they violate our territory and fly over Poland. That intention was underscored by a message from Polish Foreign Minister Radek Sikorski to Russia at a UN Security Council meeting called by Estonia.
If another missile or aircraft enters our space without permission, deliberately or by mistake, and gets shot down and the wreckage falls on NATO territory, please don't come here to whine about it. You have been warned.
Meanwhile, in Denmark, authorities are urgently investigating the source of large, sophisticated drones, which forced the closure of Copenhagen Airport for several hours Monday night. The Danish government says the perpetrator must be what it calls a capable actor, stopping short of saying a state actor. Moscow again denies involvement. But some good news Tuesday for Eastern Flank countries seeking support from their most powerful ally, President Donald Trump.
Mr. President, do you think that NATO countries should shoot down Russian aircraft if they enter their airspace?
Yes, I do.
Those three words from Washington may be the strongest deterrent yet in NATO's arsenal. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Okay, we heard about the Russian jets flying over Estonia, among other places. We heard President Trump say he wants NATO countries to shoot down intruding aircraft. Now we have called Estonia's foreign minister, Margus Tsahkna. He's on the line from New York. Foreign minister, welcome. And can you tell me, is Estonia in fact prepared to open fire if needed on Russian aircraft?
As President Trump said, and as well Secretary General Rutte said, that NATO is ready to act, as NATO is, this is the reason why actually we are a member of NATO, and NATO based on secured and defense NATO territory. So if Russia is coming again and is a direct threat to us, then NATO will act as it was meant. Hmm. But it was very important that President Trump said very clearly as well on political level that we'll do that. So this is a red line, and this is a warning to Putin not to test us anymore.
You just said red line, and you also mentioned President Trump's remarks. He said many things, of course, yesterday, including reshaping his overall stance toward Ukraine and Russia. He has several times reached out to Russia. He has even met with President Vladimir Putin. But I understood his remarks yesterday as resetting the U.S. position to what it was during the Biden administration, that Ukraine should fight it out and that the U.S. will keep sending weapons, although in a somewhat different form. What do you make of the president's change there?
If you put everything together, what has happened during the last couple of weeks in Europe, and mean as well the attacks against Poland, actually violation of airspace to Estonia, and then NATO gathered twice already based on Article 4 consultations and made a very strong statement, and also created the mission Eastern Sentry to increase the capability on the eastern flank. And then twice as well, the United Nations Security Council came together and really said very clear positions about Russian aggressive behavior, and also about Ukraine. Yesterday, the Security Council was clear, and U.S. has been as well in very clear positions on that. So we can say that on rhetoric, at least, there has been a change on the position of President Trump as well. And these are the good news, because we have been on the position all the time that we need to support Ukraine. We need to be very clear about Russia and put Russia under pressure about the sanctions and support Ukraine continuously. So I can say that these are the good news, but let's see what is going to happen.
Has there been, from your perspective then, positive developments over the past 6 or 8 months? There have been, there are a lot of skeptics of the U.S. approach to the war in Ukraine here in the United States. President Trump spoke for them, reached out and tried to reach an accommodation, and found out that doesn't seem to be possible right now, and so he's back to the original position. Is that what you see happening here?
This is exactly what we were telling already months ago, that we need to focus on putting pressure on Putin. We need to support Ukraine, because Putin is just playing with President Trump as well to win the time. But in real life, what has happened was that after Alaska meeting, Putin was brought out from the isolation. He's using that as a victory. But in real life, Putin has not changed any goals about Ukraine. That's the truth as well, that he has not gained any kind of strategic breakthrough on the battlefield. Controversially, his economical figures are very bad. His economy is not doing well. And yesterday as well, after the President Trump and President Zelensky meeting, Trump said that he got an overview about the economical situation. So the truth is, if Europe is doing our part and also US, I think that we can push Putin on the position when he really starts to negotiate about the peace, which will be lasting and justful. So let's see. We have known this position already years.
We've just got a few seconds left, but I will note that as President Trump took office for the second time, some people feared the end of NATO. Do you think NATO is actually stronger now?
NATO is stronger now. NATO is politically stronger as well. In The Hague, NATO decided to increase the investment spending to the 5% of GDP. And also we saw that NATO is able to act from the first second on the eastern flank. In Poland, the drones were shot down.
Yeah.
And also in Estonia, NATO reacted from the first second, and planes went up and the situation was under control.
Okay.
So we can say that we are stronger.
Estonia's Foreign Minister Markus Takna, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
You're tuned in to the Wednesday morning show here on KAXE KBXE, People Power Radio. Coming up in a bit, it's going to be From the Vault, where we play something from the KBXE vinyl library, like we do here on the Wednesday morning show every week. And I'm Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning. Did you close the vault back up?
No, I never close it until I put the record back in there.
Oh, okay. Oh, boy.
So if anyone ever wanted to Ocean's 11 our record vinyl library,
it could be happening right now.
And we couldn't stop them because we're on the air. We can't leave.
Exactly. That'd be awkward.
So, and then coming up in a bit, we're going to be talking with a member of the Bemidji Lions Club about an upcoming fundraising event. And at around 8:40, we're going to be talking about the Kitchikami Regional Library System, about the Art Kit program they've been doing the past few months and will be continuing through November. And talking about libraries, Heather, where are you at on libraries?
I am for libraries. I was thinking about that because there have been all these news stories about our local libraries and what they're going through right now with funding.
Yes, which you can find on our website, kaxe.org. Our news team is keeping up to date on all the goings on with the current funding for libraries right now in our area.
Yeah. And I was just kind of thinking about libraries have always been a presence in my life, right? They're not necessarily the same library, but libraries, you know, where I've been throughout my life and the different sections in the libraries and what I was reading and who I met. And it's something that it's so ever present that you almost take it for granted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I remember I was little, like very little. I bet I remember from when I was 3 or 4. And the lady who used to read to me at the library, her name was Dar, and she was adorable. And I always wondered how she could read the children's books without actually looking at the words on the page. How do they do that? It's amazing. And then, of course, you know, when my son was born, taking him to the library every week for crafts and a book. And it was like magic for him, too. But so many other, and not just books, but music and movies and everything else. And I know you're a big reader.
Yes. So my hometown didn't, like, the library was just the library in the school.
Yeah.
And, like, wasn't really, I don't know if it was open in the summer. We never really went in the summer if it was.
Yep.
But so when we were going to the library, it'd be, like, in Thief River Falls or Hellock. And it was, like, it would be an event when you're going to those for books because they have like so many different books.
Yeah.
And I remember the Thief River one having like a whole kids section. And I loved reading the, oh gosh, what are those books called again? Hold on a second.
You have to check in with our team of experts. What were the books that Andrew used to read?
The Adventures of the Bailey School Kids.
I don't know that
one. Where they would have some supernatural character coming into their town and doing some normal human job.
Ooh.
And then they have to like prove that they're this mythical creature.
Oh, so like known supernatural creatures?
Yeah, all the titles were like, Gargoyles Don't Drive School Buses.
Oh, okay.
Or like Vampires Don't Wear Polka Dots.
Sure, sure. I think I like have seen those, but those were great.
Yes.
Okay.
I loved them. I scooped them up as many copies as I could.
Yeah. Don't you love that if you find, especially when I was a kid, if I could find a series so I could stay in that world as long as possible? Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Laura Ingalls Wilder, Anne of Green Gables, Babysitter Club, Nancy Drew, come on.
I was a big, they had like Berenstain Bears chapter books.
Yeah.
For like, it was just focused on the kids.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed those, would scoop those up all the time. And then even as I got older, when I moved to Fargo back in 2011, I couldn't afford internet on my own.
Oh, sure.
So I would go to the library to use the internet. And, oh man, you just spend all afternoon there just doing like updating your computer stuff and then like reading books and then like, oh, I'm going to take home these because I got really into, what's that generation called of like Hemingway and Fitzgerald? Were they the Lost Generation? I think is what they were called.
So sort of mid-century.
I got really into them at that time. So I was like reading a bunch of their books from the library and it was just fun.
And that was a great library. I also lived in Fargo for a number of years, and they have a great library system there. The main branch is magical. you know, especially coming from smaller towns growing up and loving their collections as well and some really beautiful buildings. But when there's that much, it's it's not overwhelming. It's almost like a treasure trove, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, you know, there are those, it's finding those experiences that aren't curated toward you based on this and this and this. You're just walking around in a space and finding what catches your eye. It is, it's amazing.
Well, the excitement of like going into a library, knowing kind of what book or what author you're looking
for.
Oh,
sure.
And then kind of the, like the hunt through of like, okay, which section would it be?
Yeah.
And then getting into the alphabet. And then you find out like they have a whole bunch of books by this author. And you're like, oh my gosh, I just, yeah. This is like, I just hit the jackpot kind of feeling.
Yeah. Terry Pratchett for me was when I was probably in my early 20s and discovered Terry Pratchett. And I was just hooked. I don't know if, have you read any of his books? There are, I would say, oh, what would you call them? They're, fantasy books. They take place in these different worlds, but they are very humorous. And I just really enjoyed them because there's like a couple of them are just a laugh on every single page. And, but you still get sucked into the universe. Like it doesn't detract from what's going on in the story. And they are so enjoyable. And he was prolific. So there were a ton. But then also like the nonfiction books, like I learned how to upholster.
Oh, really?
By getting, you know, a book from the library and lots of other things, cookbooks and all sorts of things like that. So it's always been such a valuable resource and it's easy to take for granted.
Yeah. So let us know your library story. Text us at 218-326-1234. Did you have a library experience that was like very, what's the word? Not life-changing. That seems a bit dramatic, but.
Well, it can be life-changing.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you got your first library card?
Yeah.
Or
your last one.
Your last one. I hope I haven't gotten my last one yet.
You think you're going to get a new one?
Well, you have to. You have to renew them every few years.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That happened to me recently. So I'm good for at least probably another 4 years, I think.
So let's hope that's not your last one.
Text us at 218-326-1234. Now it's time for From the Vault, which Heather Johnson, you were the one who coined that term.
I guess so, yeah.
From the KBXE Vinyl Library, where we pick something from the library to encourage our volunteer DJs here in Bemidji to go back there and dig through the treasure trove of amazing albums back there. And today we're going to hear from Kate and Anna McGarrigle. They have an album called Love Over and Over, and we are going to play the title track from it.
I could say
And that was Kate and Anna McGarrigle with the song Love Over and Over from the album Love Over and Over. From the Vault, the KBXE Vinyl Library is a way to encourage our volunteer DJs here in Bemidji to play something from the Vault.
Yeah, I like that. It was boppy. I hadn't heard it before.
Yeah, perfect fall morning tune for you.
I think so. You did well.
Thank you. We received support from Minnesota Power, an elite company powering the region's homes, businesses, and industries since 1923. Learn more about its vision of a carbon-free future at mnpower.com/energyforward.
Support for this program comes from Sanford Health, with primary care locations in Bemidji and across the Upper Midwest. Sanford Health is committed to providing care close to home. Learn more at sanfordhealth.org.
It's time now for Best Wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary for today, September 24th.
All right, Ian Poposky, we're wishing a happy 76th birthday to Jill Parson today. And Bill Marshall from Grand Rapids is having a 70th birthday today. Wow. Happy birthday.
And also in Grand Rapids, Polly Eddington celebrating their 81st birthday today. Happy birthday. And then our very own Kari Hedlund.
I know her.
Celebrating her birthday today. Turning 44. Happy birthday to our very own Kari Hedlund.
Happy birthday, Kari. She's just a youngin'.
Yeah, absolutely. And to celebrate these birthdays, we're going to play a tune from the new David Byrne album. It's called Who Is the Sky? This song is called When We Are Singing.
When we are singing.
Now, when you turn the pages,
And that was David Byrne with the song When We Are Singing from the album Who Is the Sky. If you have a birthday or anniversary to share, text us at 218-326-1234. And speaking of that, we just got a couple texts.
We did. We heard from Susan from Cotton. Susan says, as the child of college professors, libraries were central in our lives. But the biggie was at 16, my dad took me to the Library of Congress to do research. Shortly after, all the president's men came out, and seeing them in that reading room just thrilled me. Oh my gosh. Oh, I can't even imagine. Cool. That is awesome.
And then we heard from Emily from Des Moines. Thank for playing the song by Kate and Anna McGarrigle.
Yeah.
It reminds me of music from my childhood. Well, absolutely. You're welcome, Emily.
Oh, their harmonies are so beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah.
Thank you, Susan and Emily, for texting in this morning.
Yeah, and if you got a library story you want to share with us, text us at 218-326-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And coming up in a bit, we're going to hear from Morning Edition talking about the American Five, which tells the story of Martin Luther King Jr. and his closest allies as they plan the March on Washington.
Very good.
And some events going on in our area. Grand Rapids Area Schools host a panel on why attendance matters today at 10 a.m. in the Rife Center lobby, and again this evening at 6 at the district office building. Learn about support available to families, followed by a question and answer session.
And there will be a blood drive in memory of Ironton resident Leon Sheffers Thursday, September 25th from 9 to 3 at Northland Arboretum in Baxter. Sheffers was a dedicated Red Cross blood donor who passed away in March. Appointments can be made at redcrossblood.org.
Now more from Morning Edition.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. On a hot summer day a little over six decades ago, a 250,000 people gathered peacefully in Washington, D.C. to demand laws to advance civil rights, to protect voting rights, and to stop employment discrimination. It was there that the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his now famous I Have a Dream speech. King's preparations with his close allies for that pivotal moment are the subject of Chess Jacobs' new play, The American Five.
Coretta Scott King, Bayard Rustin, Stanley Levison, and Clarence B. Jones.
Actor Roe Boddy plays the role of King. Here he is at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. during a rehearsal of a scene where the five are sitting around a dinner table.
That's it. That's it. A fresh piece of challah and some collard greens. Woo! That'll make you do the horror to a Negro spiritual thing. Stan! Stan, you have to try this.
It's okay, Mrs. King. I'm full. We need to get back to
work. Oh, come on, Stan. Now, this is my house.
Can we just go back there?
Jacobs and Boddy stepped aside from the rehearsal for a few minutes, and we started by talking about how elements of the play are drawn from real life. Jacobs said that in doing his research, he learned that
there's several mentionings of them getting together over dinner, of them even singing together sometimes, different moments where it's referred to that Dr. King actually loved to cook. Mm-hmm. He loved to make smothered greens. He loved to be very hospitable.
So I'm going to turn with you because you're getting ready to go before an audience as Martin Luther King Jr., who's only one of the most famous people in modern history, and certainly at least among many segments of the American population, one of the most revered. No pressure at all.
None at all.
But what drew you to this role, and what are you exploring in it that is interesting to you as an actor?
Well, I've had the privilege of playing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. four times now. And for some reason, he just keeps coming back into my life. And
you think it's your voice?
I think it's my height, it's my voice, you know. And so I've got that in my favor. But, you know, it's a privilege. I'm not interested in doing an imitation. I'm interested in working from the inside out and bringing the humanity of who he was and the essence.
Is it ever intimidating?
No, it's not intimidating because we all have our idea of who he was. I had my idea of who he was. And what's beautiful about what Chester's written is that it breaks all of those preconceived notions and the cost to be the boss, you know, and there's a lot, you know, he suffered from depression and and morbidity. So I think it's important for people to see the struggles that he faced with trying to get civil rights.
Why do you think that's important?
I think that it's important for us to see great people as human and bring them down so that we can say, oh, this great person who was flawed, like anybody else, can do great things. Maybe so can I.
Jess, a similar question for you is, I mean, the speech is certainly well known.
Yeah.
There are Martin Luther King, there are I Have a Dream speech contests like all over the country. Yeah. What is it that you wanted to bring to the story that you feel adds to what people think they know?
Well, you know, there's history and then there's hidden history. And so when you go and look back and see that someone like Bayard Rustin, you know, was out and publicly gay in the 1950s and 60s, had been convicted of charges and still persevering and found the wherewithal to keep going. That's pretty much the reason why. It's like,
Or Stanley Levison, who was under surveillance his entire life
and then decided that he was going to work for Dr. King behind the radar, right? Like, for me, I really respect these people because of the well of resilience that they had. But doing that on top of all of the very human things we go through at home and still finding the 35 hours in a day to work and advocate for and stand up civil rights for the nation, for me, speaks volumes, right? So that in today's time, when we feel like we don't have the 30 minutes to go out and advocate, that we recognize that it took this level of commitment to have the rights that we have today. And that's something I don't take lightly.
Is that what you wanted to get out of it in a way, to sort of motivate people to think about the present moment?
I have a canvas of hopes for what people get out of this show. For me, is to see the different kinds of people from the different places in America that it took for this kind of work to be possible, right? And I think this idea of the five, what we have is a queer man, we have a wealthy Black man, we have a woman who was a sharecropper, we have Dr. King who grew up in a low-income preaching family.
We have a woman who has dreams of her own.
And a woman who has dreams of her own, who had 2 degrees.
Who was able who had a time when a lot of women didn't go to college, but who had 2 degrees and who was clearly a presence in her own right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, 1963 was a landmark year. It was also a very traumatic and violent year. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple months before the March on Washington, the, you know, civil rights activist, the NAACP's first field secretary in Mississippi, was gunned down in his own driveway in Jackson, Mississippi. Just a month later, after the march, the 16th Street Baptist Church was bombed in Birmingham, killing the four little girls. And then a few months after that, President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And I'm just wondering how you take people to that time.
I'm always considering the fact that because I'm here dancing in a gay bar with my friends who represent the mosaic of the world, somebody could die so that I could do this, right? Somebody got hosed down. Somebody ran away from a plantation. All of these things happened in order for me to be in this room right now.
Before we let you go, we're speaking with you at Forge Theater.
Yes.
It is here that President Lincoln was assassinated. Mm-hmm. The March on Washington was actually planned to coincide with the centennial of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. So I wanted to ask, like, what's the significance of the fact that this play will be performed here?
Well, for me, I mean, just being here where, you know, the great emancipator was, and I couldn't think of a better time to be doing a history play. And to have this play be done, you know, just a few feet from where that event took place, and to have the spirits of all these giants in there, including him, once we get in there.
Yes.
I hope it shifts the air a little bit.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why this show is called The American Five, because these are people who fought for rights of Americans in very broad and daring ways.
Mm-hmm. That is playwright Chess Jacobs and actor Roe Boddy, who plays Martin Luther King Jr. in Jacobs' new play, The American Five. It runs through October 12th at Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C. Chess Jacob, Roe Boddy, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you
for having us.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
This is NPR News.
And you're listening to Morning Edition here on member-supported radio, KAXE, KBXE. I'm Andrew DeZingle, here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we receive support from the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and Saturdays at 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the intersection of Golf Course Road and Pakegama Avenue, offering an EBT double match and many more programs bringing produce to members of our community. More at grfarmersmarket.org.
And we receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more, Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
We receive support from the Bonner Eye Clinic with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, offering cataract surgery, LASIK, and general eye exams. BonnerEyeClinic.com. Let us help you see clearly.
And the Bemidji Lions Club raffle, fall raffle, is coming up. And here to talk more about it is Bemidji Lions Club member Ethan Larson. Welcome to the show, Ethan.
Thank you, Andrew and Heather.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. Well, actually, you also have another special guest here. Do you want to introduce who the fourth person here is?
Yes, I brought my, he's sort of an honorary Lions member. Her name is Kiki.
And she's dressed up in her little Lions bandana.
So what is going on with the fall raffle this year?
Each year we have we raffle off a Sportsman 450 ATV that is from the Bemidji Sports Center. It is a, we do this every year for the last few years, and our tickets are $10, and we have each weekend during the summer, we have at various locations around Bemidji, we have we sell raffle tickets for our ATV fundraiser, and the drawing is November 6th at the Bemidji Eagles Club during one of our regular Wednesday meetings.
Okay, so how do people get tickets for the raffle?
Like I said, each weekend we have it at various locations, so they like it. Lucan's, they could stop there on their way grocery shopping and pick up tickets, and or they can see one of the Lions Club members. And in conjunction, we do have our First City Lions that do help us with, they're sort of a partner.
Okay.
That helps. This is one of our fundraisers that we've got two Lions Club in Bemidji, and this is one of the fundraisers that both are co-opting.
Oh, that's great that you can collaborate like that with the two chapters. That's fantastic. What are the Lions fundraising for?
The money, we have about 30 organizations around Bemidji that we donate money to.
Oh, wow.
So the money that we raise goes back to the organizations that we donate money to.
Sure, in our community. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And so, how does the decision process get made of like who the Lions Club donates to?
We have a list of about 30 organizations. Several are like the Boys and Girls Club, the Bemidji, one of our newest ones is the Community Theater.
Oh, okay. Nice.
The public library.
That's great. And those are all such important things to our community here.
Right.
So that's excellent. So what happens if you're not like an ATV person?
Well, that's a good question. They could either, for our first prize, it's either the ATV or $5,000 in cash.
Oh, nice. So you can
and
choose.
Our second prize is $1,000, and the third prize is $500.
Fantastic.
So for the drawing on November 6th, are people allowed to come if you're not a Lions member to that meeting, just to, in case you do win, you could be there?
on the ticket, we do have a place where they have their phone number.
Mm-hmm.
So we do, if their name is drawn, then we do call them.
Okay. So, Ethan, for people that may not know, what do Lions Club members do? Like, because you have is it weekly meetings, correct?
Yes.
So, like, kind of what is the Lions Club, like, what happens at these meetings?
We have guest speakers. One Wednesday we have our business meeting after we have a monthly board meeting. So after the board meeting, we have our business meeting, but mainly it's just guest speakers. It's an hour out of our club's time to get together and like have fellowship, get to see friends and.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's like even more important nowadays where it seems like we've become kind of more separated from each other. It's a chance, like an excuse to just gather together and like hang out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and make an impact on the community. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Are you accepting new members in the Lions?
We always are, yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so how do you become a member?
Anybody's invited to our club meeting, and the meetings are every Wednesday, and we've got one this afternoon at noon at the Eagles Club. Anyone's welcome, and if they're interested in joining, we've got membership applications. They could just fill it out, and they can give it to one of our club members and...
Yeah. Excellent. So you mentioned that, so the drawing's on November 6th. You mentioned that at various locations you can pick up the tickets. Is it something like if you follow the Facebook page, you can know where the location is? Okay, yes. So what is the Facebook page called?
Our Facebook page is just Bemidji Lions.
Excellent. All right, so that drawing is on November 6th. You do not need to attend to win. Nope.
And actually, November 6th is that date is a few days before opening deer season.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
So the drawing date has sort of a significance.
Totally. Yeah. You could have a whole new vehicle for your deer hunting experience.
Right.
So no more schlepping things around on your back. You toss them into the ATV. That's great.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ethan,
thank
for joining
you.
Us.
And Kiki.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Andrew and Heather.
All right. We're going to play a tune for you now. This is Anna Teevil from her new album, Animal Poem. This song is called Meantime.
The family down the street moved out. That dad who slapped his kids around and built a swing behind the house that no one ever used. It's funny how we find it hard to see into a tangled heart. The beautiful and brutal parts are beating in us too. And I'm gonna love you in the meantime, till the gold light ends. In the madness of real life, I promise to do my best. And sometimes when the morning comes, I roll away from everyone, holding all. I know you know that truth. It's hard to keep the wheels attached, the everyday, the aftermath, the purple fading blue to black when sun sets like a bruise. And I'm gonna love you in the meantime, till the gold. In the madness of real
swing is still reaching in the wind. I reach for you, something like that, eternally, but never quite becoming good. But God, I'm trying to be a better friend, and I'm gonna love you.
And that is Anna Teevil with the song Meantime for her new album, Animal Poem. This is the seventh album from the Portland folk singer and poetic lyrics and jazzy tunes. So I enjoy Anna Teevil.
I do too. That was great. I should check out the album.
Excellent. That is Heather Johnson. I'm Andrew DeZingle. We are your Wednesday morning show crew. And programming is supported by the Bush Foundation, accepting application for the 2026 Bush Fellowship September 2nd through noon on October 7th. The Bush Fellowship invests in leaders and their capacity to do more good. Up to 30 leaders receive $150,000 to support their leadership plan. Visit bushfoundation.org.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
And as for weather today, areas of fog until 10 a.m., mostly sunny with highs 74 to 76, calm winds. Tonight, mostly clear, lows 54 to 56 degrees with calm wind again. And Thursday, sunny, highs in the mid to upper 70s, overnight lows in the high 40s. And Friday, sunny with highs 70 to 75, southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And where are your favorite places to go to look at fall colors? You can text us at our text line at 218-326-1234. What's your favorite fall color? Is it yellow?
No, it's orange.
Oh, that's orange. A good choice.
It's my favorite color. How about you?
I like the red leaves.
Okay, I have another. Other than leaves, we have to also